welcome to episode 147 of The Winning Agenda. My name is Jesse Marshall, and joining me tonight, as always, is Wilfred E. Horrig. How are you, Wilfie?
Yes, I don't get any accolades this time. That's okay.
No, we're not doing the intros because I forgot to write them down before we started recording. I can do them off the top of my head if you like.
No, that's okay. I'm sure long-time listeners and newer listeners alike should be fairly across them by now, I would imagine.
Well, actually, it's probably not a good episode for me to miss out on the intros because we actually have a new addition to your intro this week, and that is 2018 store champion Wilfred E. Horrig.
Wow, that's incredible. I will maybe pause for 5 seconds while the listeners can give me a round of applause.
Yep. Thank you, listeners. Yeah, so well done, Wilfie. You won the Good Games Melbourne Store Championship after coming second in the other, in one of the other two Melbourne Store Championships. Were you pleased to go one better?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, good to win a tournament. I would say that probably everyone agrees with that. You know, I had some good games along the way, and I have another plaque to add to my pile of plaques underneath my desk, so that's good, I suppose, in that sense, that I have now more material possessions to remind me of my Netrunner achievements.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever made winning a trophy sound so unappealing, but in all seriousness, how do you feel about your pile of plaques? How does it make you feel when you look at it in your cold, cold machine heart?
I think it's good. I actually do have my... I'm just looking around now. I do have my World's trophy, I guess, somewhat more prominently featured than the others. Yeah, I think that because of the shape, it sort of didn't really make sense to shove it in a drawer. So it's on my...
Is that the only reason?
Yeah, one of the only reasons.
Just because of the shape?
Yeah, yeah, it's more efficient this way to have it on my shelf, and yeah, it's on my bookshelves next to all my, I guess, other possessions. So yeah, that's cool, I suppose, if you're into that sort of thing.
Which you seem to be increasingly
into. Should we talk about the store championships maybe that I played in?
Well, I thought we were.
Just so we can give some useful content.
Sure. So what decks did you play at the store championship, Wilfie?
Maybe we can talk about the season more generally. So I've played 3 this season. Jesse, did you manage to play any?
Unfortunately not. I've been moving house, and all the associated time sinks on my weekend mean that it's difficult for me to get down. So it's been a bit of bad timing, but I've been pleased to see you doing very well.
Oh, well, hopefully that all sorts itself out quite soon and you have a shiny new house and everything in it as appropriate. Do you know where you'll store your plaques yet?
They're actually right next to me at the moment. I'm sitting in my new house, in my study, enjoying the lovely view out my back window. And yes, there are my plaques off to the right, sitting on a shelf.
So in the 3 store champs, I first started by testing my Worlds decks again after the MWL. All 3 of the tournaments were after the MWL, so we had a fair amount of time to think about how the MWL would affect the metagame, as well as the 3 new packs that had been released in that time, since even Council of the Crest was released before the first store champs of our season. So that was cool in that it was a new injection of cards and a changing format. And I think the first thing I did was try to play my Worlds decks again, since, you know, why ruin a good thing if you have it going? So I started by just doing some tweaks to the Haley and the CI that I played at Worlds, and I sort of quickly found that with CI, at least when you lose your best card and have to replace it with a card that's worse than any other card in the deck.
And what did you replace it with? And which cards are you talking about there? Just for those listeners who haven't been following along quite as closely.
Of course. So the Violet level clearance was one of the additions to the ban list, as we talked about in our last episode. And that was definitely the best card in any CI, regardless of what strategy you went with. And having to replace it with I mean, you could go in a few different directions. You could play more card draw, play more money, but or just play some other effect entirely. But either way, you were changing the most powerful card in your deck for something much worse, which just made your game plan a lot less consistent in every scenario, just because Violet level really helped you, as we talked about in our last episode, really helped you at all stages in the game. So I sort of found that while if your game plan was to set up MCAP, MCA austerity policy as fast as possible and really pressure the runner by making them interact with your remotes only to trash your MCAP, so not even to score any agendas, while having your centrals protected by the CI natural ability and having generally strong and effective ice, you really needed a lot of credits over the game to support that, because scoring with MCAP was quite resource intensive if you wanted to protect essentially three servers. So that sort of made that strategy a bit worse, losing Violet level clearance, since it didn't allow you to have that credit advantage so early in the game.
And I think it's worth mentioning on that, that whether a deck is good enough to win Worlds or not quite good enough to win a tournament is a really fine line. And there were a lot of moments in games at Worlds, I think, for you, where you were only a couple of credits over what you needed to be, or right on the number of credits you needed to be on to be able to execute your game plan. And so losing something like Violet level may sound like, oh, well, you can just replace it with something else that makes credits or draws cards. But if it's only a couple of clicks less efficient over the course of the game, it can dramatically impact on your ability to do those things you're talking about at the right moment.
Yeah, exactly. And CI exacerbates that to a large extent, because to execute your game plan, you really need this fine balance of credits and cards. And unfortunately, Violet level gave you both at the most efficient rate possible.
So you lost that, and what did you replace it with?
Yeah, so, I mean, I tried a couple things. From the Worlds list, I tried playing another IPO, some green level clearances, just more ice, anonymous tips. Really, I tried a number of things, but I just found that, sure, the deck might be playable, but you lose so many turns because you don't have that tempo gain at the beginning of the game. And as I said before, CI really exacerbates that, because to execute your game plan, you need cards. To keep cards in your hand, you need credits, and you need credits to do the things that you want to do in the game. So yeah, if you lose a couple turns or a couple clicks over the course of the game, that's easily enough to turn some games that would be very close into games that you just lose. So of course, the games where you know, have everything early and just bury your opponent in resources,
you still win those
ones. You still win those ones, but in the closer games, the deck's just a lot less powerful. So I reluctantly shelved it for the time being. I don't think it's totally dead, but it's definitely more of a metagame call now than it used to be, and I think a more linear form of CI would be better, because you can more accurately work out when your deck is going to be good. So as opposed to the deck where I played at Worlds, where you have a little bit of everything to deal with most runner decks, that's good when you have lots of resources and you can be more flexible, but when you don't have as many resources, you really have to narrow in on one game plan more and hope that that's successful. So I really wouldn't recommend playing my style of CI in the future. So I sort of switched to a number of... I don't really like new things, as I have said before, so I sort of went back to Worlds to look at what was good. There were a couple of other good corp decks. You know, there was a PU style of deck that used Mushin or Shipment from Tenon, but based around Obakata Protocol and trying to grind the runner out. There was a CTM that relied on sticking asset economy early and keeping the threat of hard-hitting news, and there were some other miscellaneous corp decks that did different things, but those were probably the three big decks at Worlds. The Whampoa Reclamation really hurt PU, and I'm sure you would agree with that, in that you now had to give up a lot to extend the game with Whampoa in not having Obokata, which I don't think is a really good strategy when Obokata really helps your game plan in every scenario. Like, it helps you score and it protects itself.
Yeah, I think you basically just can't play Whampoa in those decks anymore. Obokata is just the most important card, as you say.
Of course. Yeah. So what we worked out was that, sure, you could play that sort of deck still, but you really need to have a better plan to get agendas through into your score area without Whampoa. So you really need to set up a remote earlier, which lost you a lot of defensive capability in extending the game, which sort of pushed away from what the deck was trying to do.
Yeah, I do think the deck's lost a lot of surprise factor, which was one of the reasons that it was good in the metagame at the time, was that not many people were used to playing against that sort of deck with that sort of power. And so now that people are a bit more practiced against it, the weakness of how to manage agendas is exacerbated or is more obvious, because it was masked a little bit by people's unfamiliarity and perhaps reticence in running. Or at least, even if people weren't reticent to run, they were generally too eager to run, in which case you could get them with your traps, certainly in the Mushin version that I was playing. So Whampoa wasn't as necessary early on, while you still had the element of surprise and you had a lot more information than your opponent, so you could react to their playstyle with choices that would turn out badly for them. But now that people are more practiced in playing against that sort of deck, it's more difficult to manipulate their play in that way, and it's more difficult to manage those agendas that you do draw.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not just one thing, but it's a combination of things that I think makes those kind of decks a bit worse now than they were before the MWL. And as we said, you don't really need a huge dip to go from a deck being quite good to just below what you would want to take to a tournament. So I guess the third deck that we mentioned and that we considered for Worlds was a sort of CTM assets style deck that sort of tries to keep a monetary advantage and then uses hard-hitting news, or now more commonly Seasource, to close out the game when you can gain that advantage. So I played that for the first two store champs, and that did quite well. I think it's still quite a good deck, and it was only at the third store champs that I finally switched Corp to the Asmari EdTech Wishbone, I guess, deck that won Canadian Nats, is what people are calling it. Have you had any chance to play with or against that deck, Jesse?
No, I haven't. Talk me through the main advantages.
It has some similarity to CDM in that if you're NBN, you sort of probably have a fairly similar agenda suite, and you have a lot of cards that are shared just because they're the strongest cards that NBN has. But the difference is that rather than using asset economy, you just have operation economy combined with EdTech, and you try and play a more Glacier game and set up defenses early. And the deck really revolves around currents with scarcity of resources, and the new card, which we will talk about soon, Death and Taxes. So in that way, you can lock runners out of making plays efficiently with between your ID ability and your currents, and using that you can support a Glacier game plan that requires a lot of credits. So as opposed to CTM, where you're trying to push assets onto the board early and hope that that can snowball into a overwhelming money advantage, sure, that can happen to some extent, but I think it's a lot harder now with the prevalence of link runners between Valencia, sort of, Edward Kim, and Geist now becoming much more popular, and just link in general, your ability to grind your opponent out with CDM has become a lot harder. So yeah, I switched to the Wishbone deck, and that turned out quite successfully. It was actually Jan,
aka Crushed Guava,
hopefully soon to be guest panelist, although he might disagree with that. But yeah, we tested a fair bit, and he said that he is known for checking NetRunnerDB probably about 6 times a day. So when he said, yeah, there's this new deck from Canadian Nationals, it's based around scarcity and it has a good matchup against resource intensive runners, and we know that between my Haley, Geists, Pirates sorts of Haley, and even Valencia, regular Valencia decks, to some extent every good runner has a reliance on resources now. So I thought that was a sort of a good meta call, and he said, just test it out a little bit and see if you like it. And so I liked it, so I played it at the store champs, and that turned out really well. I don't think I dropped a game with it all day.
Yeah, so what do you think was the main advantage to playing that deck? So like, what's the path to scoring that's better than CTM? Is it just that you're able to accumulate more money more easily in a way that's less able to be disrupted by the runner?
Yeah, I think that's it to a large extent. You're not as reliant on having a very good early game, like setting up bankers or multiple drip assets early and snowballing that into a lead. You can sort of play a more consistent game, and if you don't bleed too many agendas early, you can eventually get to the same point that you're trying to get to with CTM, which is where you have a remote that's hard enough to get through that you can score slowly, or get into a situation where you can exchange, your opponent is forced to become tagged, or is forced to put themselves into a situation where they can become tagged and exchange to get to 7 points. So yeah, that was quite good, and I'm glad I switched, although I don't think CTM is the worst, but I think this deck has some advantages, especially against resource or link heavy runners. Those are the main benefits, and so yeah, that was quite good. On the runner side, I just found that my World's Haley, I think I made a few changes, but not that many, really just to deal with the loss of Levy, which, I mean, Levy is a good card, but I think without as many damage decks like the PU, when you're mostly now facing against Titan, CTM, or Asmari, HB, or some sort of HB, whether CI or something else, where you're mostly, they're mostly trying to set up a remote early, it's not as important to have Levy because the games don't go as long, even against decks like Ag Infusion, which is still good to some extent. You don't really often get into a situation where you need to Levy for the game. So I thought that losing Levy was not such a big deal for the Haley deck. It does hurt you, as I said, when you get damaged or when you have to play a very long game. But against faster decks, you rarely have the time to Levy for good value anyway. So that wasn't a huge hit. I just cut it and it turned out to be not such a big deal. I think the deck is still quite good.
Okay, cool. So you went with that and that worked out well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that deck wasn't as good as the Corp. I think I did drop a game or two with it, mostly against Titan, where Project Atlas is quite a good counter to indexing, and the Titan deck, it's really easy for them to score an Atlas early, so you sort of pushed in multiple angles where you need to set up and try and establish Clot, but you also, as well as Icebreakers, but you also need to score points early before they can set up their Atlas, which is a pretty hard thing to do. So I think I'd probably, if I were to continue playing the deck, I'd probably try and make some changes to counter that somewhat, maybe more Maker's Eyes and fewer indexings, but...
Does the loss of Levy mean that you draw less aggressively? Does it mean that it's the setup speed, which was already slow, is a little slower because you end up with some awkward hands that you can't afford to lose cards from?
Yeah, to some extent, but I think if between Shadow Net, same old thing, and Scavenge, you have some potential, assuming that they're not dealing you damage, you have quite a bit of potential for recovering from having to discard cards early, so I don't think that's a huge deal unless you play against a deck that's actually getting rid of cards from your hand, but in general, I haven't found that to be a huge problem in most scenarios.
Cool. So was there anything else you wanted to mention about the store champs, or perhaps talk us through the final a little bit? I understand that you came from the loser's bracket and managed to win 2 games.
Oh, yeah, sure. So, yeah, I played against Asher. He has been doing quite well in the store champs as well, so it was no surprise to find him in the finals. And, yeah, I came from the loser's bracket after losing to John, who was playing the Titan deck. And Asher was playing a fast advanced PE deck. I think he had been brewing it for a while, but thankfully I was able to index into an Obakata early and score that while having a Laguna in play for a while. So while he did score some points, an Obakata from a remote, he was never really threatening 7 points after I could get Laguna down early and score the Obakata without too much tempo loss. And then we just built up resources for a while, and then eventually I made an indexing which hit another two agendas. So that was pretty good. Indexing was extremely good in that game because, of course, it allows you to avoid traps on R&D, and they usually don't have a huge number of ice to protect their servers.
People used to play indexing as a way to deal with PE decks and Jinteki traps, so now it's not only the best multi-access card in general, probably, but still very good at dealing with PE.
Yep, exactly. So that sort of was quite fortuitous that it worked out that way, I think. Even without Levy. I mean, I did manage to get down Feedback Filter, so losing that would have been an issue, but even without Levy, it didn't seem to be too much of a problem, since we were both not trying to make the game last as long as possible, really. And then in my Corp game, he was playing a regular Valencia, and I was fairly flooded early, but I managed to put a toll booth on HQ that he couldn't really get through. Didn't find Black Orchestra until more than halfway through the deck, which, you know, is one of the issues with those kind of anarchs, and has always been, really.
Yeah.
So
I've seen the old two paper clips on the bottom of the stack trick before, and that was, it worked out pretty well for me.
Yep, exactly. So I had a toll booth on HQ and Enigma on a remote. I managed to score two agendas through the Enigma, and by that time, even though I was flooded, he couldn't really leverage his resource advantage to score points. So yeah, that was the finals, and now I'm the store champion.
That's so nice. And how does it, it's always a nice feeling when you get to the final game and, you know, you realize that you haven't had really bad luck and had a terrible start, and things are going pretty well, and then you get to the point where you're pretty sure you're going to win, and it feels pretty great.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a bit funny that the other two people in the top four had buys already, so coming in from the loser's bracket, it was against Asher, who didn't have a buy, it was clawing my way up.
Nice. So you two were the only ones who really needed it.
Yes, exactly.
You fought it out to the end.
Exactly.
Very good. Well, bad luck to Asher. You know, as you said, a very good player who's done consistently well in these store champs and in a lot of other tournaments, and yeah, commiserations to him for missing out on a bye, but I'm sure that even without one, he'll do well at regionals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really all I wanted was those sweet, sweet playmats, so I'm happy I managed to pick up. So,
and a plaque, come on.
Yes, the playmats and the plaque.
That's what it's all about. Very good. Well, we have some more time this week, and we wanted to try and get on to discussing some of the very cards that you were talking about there, which is the Council of the Crest data pack. I haven't heard data pack for a while. Anyway, shall we get onto that?
Sure, definitely. Should we start with the runner side?
Yeah, why not? They are at the front of the pack and the top of the page. So the first card is Exa. It's an Anarch program, virus, 3 influence, 2 to install, 1 memory. When you access cards from R&D, access one additional card. Trash Exa if the Corp purges virus counters. So this is the new improved medium. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so it's sort of like medium, sort of like R&D interface. I think that in some situations it can be powerful as a multi-access tool, but I really think this sort of drawback and this sort of effect really work very poorly together, since R&D interface and medium alike were both cards that you wanted to have in play over the course of the game, and at least having the ability to establish an R&D lock through seeing multiple cards with either of those was one of the main ways in which those cards were strong, like in addition to the regular thing of just being able to see more cards. Mm-hmm. So this is worse in a few ways. The first is that it's more risky to have multiple copies in play because each purge is worse for the runner. Usually with something like this, you want to minimize your exposure to just the corp's basic purge action, so having two or three in play, while it might end the game quickly, also leaves you in a bad spot if your opponent does get to stabilize. It's not like medium where if they purge and spend their time not icing up R&D, it was fairly easy for you to just get back in and build up more counters, so that exchange was still, in a lot of situations, beneficial for the runner. This is not really the same. And I think the other issue is that this sort of drawback you can alleviate with SACCON to some extent, and other cards that punish the corp when they purge, like Festa or Acacia, I think is the other one, and not sure if that's right, but the one that gives you credits for each counter that you lose. Yeah. So having a card like that is, I think, better for things like Tapworm or Clot, where you can spend your time drawing to find those purge punishment cards, as opposed to something like this where you have to run aggressively to make it work. So there's a few hoops that you need to jump through to make this card effective. You need a way to protect it so you can have it in play for multiple turns and reap the most benefit, but you also need a way to draw, find more protection cards, and also run at the same time. And I think doing all those things is going to be a bit difficult.
Yeah. Is this something, I mean, three influences a lot, but is it something that you could see making its way into the Haley deck, or is indexing simply too good?
Yeah, I think in Shaper especially, you already have quite a few multi-access tools, so I wouldn't want to rely on something like this, especially for your influence. I think its home is mostly in Anarch, where you can import something like SACCON, and where you might not have the best native R&D multi-access without spending influence for something like indexing or turning wheel. So I think that's the place that this could be strong.
Okay. The next card in the pack is Friday Chip, a 2-cost hardware chip, 2 influence Anarch. Whenever you trash a corp card, you may place 1 virus counter on Friday Chip. When your turn begins, you may move 1 hosted virus counter to a virus program. Not great synergy with Exa, but perhaps good synergy with some other viruses which are already in the game or yet to be released. What are your thoughts on Friday Chip as a virus counter accumulator?
Yeah, so people have said that the obvious thing to pair it with is Imp, which makes sense since that gets around the drawback of the corp not exposing their trashable cards and not allowing you to accumulate counters with Friday Chip, because you can trash even non-trashable cards with Imp. But I think cards like this have been strong in the past, where you don't really have to interact with the corp to go about your game plan, where you can sit there and accumulate resources yourself and eventually turn that into something strong. That's where these sort of slow building but efficient cards have been good in the past. So that doesn't quite mesh with what this card is trying to do. So you really have to work a bit harder to have it and something like Imp or another virus that does a similar thing at the right time. But if you can, you can get into a pattern with this where, you know, you can Imp a card, this gets a counter, you can then next turn use that again, and it sort of refreshes. But I'm a bit skeptical about how vulnerable that is to the corp just purging, because if you have invested your resources into this and Imp primarily, then a purge might just wipe out your ability to get into servers at all, especially if you're using something like Amakua.
And you've expended a lot of resources to try and set up this thing, this combo, which the corp can really deal with just by using a game action.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if this were to be strong, it would need to be with some cards that protect your investment a bit more.
And you would want, I think by that point you're getting to 3-card combos, and you would want either this or Friday Chip to have more interaction with other programs in your deck other than Imp, or whatever supplementary card you have to protect you from purges to such progenitor or whatever else to also have some utility outside of it. Because I think a 3-card combo to allow you to trash one corp card per turn, probably not strong enough.
No, yeah, I think that it would require something else, and that's why I think that these kind of cards are better when they work with more programs in your deck, which sort of requires you to be a bit more passive and draw a bit more, which doesn't really work with this, but I'm interested to see if someone can make it work.
Cool. Next card in the pack is Crypt. It's a zero-cost resource virtual. Anarch again, one influence. It says, whenever you make a successful run on Archives, you may place one virus counter on Crypt. Click Trash and use three hosted virus counters. Search your stack for a virus program and install it, paying its install cost, then shuffle the stack. So you need to run on Archives 3 times after installing this. It is 0 to install. And then you need to spend a click, and you can tutor once for 1 virus program, paying the install cost. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think that, good tutors really shouldn't be overlooked, but this really doesn't do a lot to warrant that title, especially when we've had a card like Jin in the past, and Jin has had better viruses than we have now, and that card has never really torn up tournaments. So spending a lot of clicks in order to tutor, even if you can get into Archives for free, and even if you can do this multiple times over the course of the game, I can't see any virus that would be worth having cards like Crypt in your deck just to get that virus.
Yep, that makes sense to me. Perhaps Omar is the only thing that comes to mind. Omar or Alice Merchant, where you're getting some other value from running Archives, but
yeah,
even then, tutoring for things later in the game. Tutors get worse as the game goes on, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But, you would really need to have a virus that you, if you could, you would play, 9 or 12 copies to even consider playing a card like Crypt.
Yeah. Alright, next card in the pack is Corporate Grant, in inverted commas. It is a 1-cost criminal event current, 3 influence. This card is not trashed until another current is played or a gender is scored. The first time you install a card each turn, the corp loses 1 credit. So this is one of a few pieces of Crim Econ Denial that sort of, as a package, help to fill the great hole left by Account Siphon. Once per turn, draining the corp a credit. It's similar to less powerful than Spark on the corp side, because Spark can trigger multiple times per turn and can't be turned off as easily as Corporate Grant can. But corp credits are probably scarcer and more important than runner credits, particularly since corps will often plan to have close to exact or exact numbers of credits ready to res their cards on the runner's turn. So the runner having the ability to reduce their credits by 1 can be quite impactful. What are your thoughts on Corporate Grant?
Yeah, I think the ability, as you've said, has a lot of strengths if you're playing it in a deck that can consistently install cards every turn. You can build your own Spark or however, whatever other comparison there is, which is not a bad ability. But I think the main strength of this card is that it's a reasonable and flexible criminal current that allows criminal decks to actually have a way to turn off scarcity or other currents like that, which can be quite bad for them, without necessarily having to pay influence and your restricted card slot for Employee Strike. Mm-hmm. So I can see this card being strong in quite a few decks, and it already has been good in Geist, where it sort of fits all the criteria of being really bad against scarcity, being able to install cards basically every turn and sometimes on the corpse turn with Street Peddler, and being able to see lots of cards from your deck so that you can see this card when you need it. Because for this card to be good, you really want to draw it as early as possible and play it as early as possible. It's not like something like Interdiction where you really just want to play it on the turn that's relevant.
That makes sense to me. The next card in the pack is No One Home. It is a criminal resource virtual, 0 to install, 1 influence. The first time you would take any number of tags or suffer any amount of net damage each turn, you may trash No One Home to force the corp to trace 0. If unsuccessful, the runner avoids any number of tags or prevents any amount of net damage. So this is almost feels like a sunny card, initiating corp traces that you want to fail. But I guess, you know, has synergy with Power Tap and whatever else. And it works the first time each turn on tags or net damage. So that's pretty broad usefulness across against a range of decks. I mean, you're basically covering the main strategy of two key factions on the corp side there. The question is, do criminals... The question for me with these sorts of cards is, do criminals have the money to outmoney corps consistently at this point?
Well, I think that this card is pretty good, and I wonder if this had been printed when Hard Hitting News was printed, if we'd see like how different the game would be, because I see that as being the thing that this is strongest against, where the corp really needs to not just outmoney you for Hard Hitting News to hit, but outmoney you sort of twice, with the caveat that if you have too much money, then you can just clear the tags from Hard Hitting News in general. So I think that this is a very good counter to that, and while having, as you said, broader utility of being good against two main factions, even two and a half if you count that Wayland often has cards like Hard Hitting News. And I think that for a card that costs 0, is 1 influence, and initiates a corp trace of 0, it's basically as pushed as it could be for that sort of effect.
It does only work once, though. I mean, is that better than whatever else you want to use to... I mean, it's definitely not better than Aaron. But, yeah.
Yeah, it does only work once, but I mean, how many times is the corp going to have the ability to tag you multiple times on their turn, which is when I think this is the most powerful?
Yeah, possibly more than one. It certainly makes the net damage side of it a bit weaker, I think, for it to be one use only. So then you're playing it as a tag prevention only with some slight upside. Yeah, I don't know. The fact that it's both one use only and uncertain, as in, I mean, trace 0, as you say, is reasonably certain, but it's still not a lock.
Yeah, that's true. But I think how easy it is to include this in basically any faction's deck, if you care about that sort of thing, makes it a reasonably flexible counter to a wide range of corp strategies. And, you know, as with cards like this, when those strategies are good, this card is good. When they're not, this card is not. But for the numbers on this card, I think it's as strong as it can be in the situations when it's good.
The next card in the pack is Marathon. It's a Shaper event run, cost 1, influence 5. Make a run on a remote server. When the run ends, gain a click and add Marathon to your grip instead of trashing it if the run was successful. You may not make another run on that server for the remainder of this turn. So it's repeatable if you're successful. It keeps coming back, and it keeps giving you an extra click at the cost of 1 credit each turn. But it requires them to have a remote server. This is pretty strong open remote server punishment, I would have thought. Like, an extra click every turn is nothing to sneeze at.
Is it an extra click? Yeah, I mean, it lets you check the remote for free, right?
Sure, sure. So you have to spend that extra click doing a particular thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if there was something like Desperado still in the game, then this would be a lot stronger. But the fact that it's a Shaper 5 influence card, and often Shaper decks deal with large numbers of corp remotes by bypassing them entirely. It's not often we see at the moment a Shaper deck that has the plan of trashing cards frequently from the corpse side. You really need a card like Scrubber or Parisha to make that good, and then you're sort of getting a 2 or 3 card combo, as we talked about before, of having things that let you trash assets, this that lets you check remotes without paying clicks, and then some other way to go about your regular game plan. So I'm not quite sure this is in the right faction or it's at the right point in the game for this sort of card to be good, but then again, if you really need to have this effect, there's nothing else really in the game that gives you the ability to check as many unprotected remotes as you like.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Without another way to make use of checking remotes over and over again, seems bad. And yeah, certainly Shaper's plan is to attack centrals most of the time and ignore remotes as much as possible. Bahali is the next card. It is a Shaper resource virtual, 2 to install, 1 influence. And it says, trash break the last subroutine on the encountered piece of ice. I mean, it's okay. We are seeing more multi-sub ice. However, in the run is usually the last subroutine, not always. And on obviously on single sub pieces of ice, this just lets you break the ice. It's sort of like, you know, reminiscent of Fairy in some ways, but it's 2 to install. I don't know. As a 1 influence card, I could see this getting played a little bit.
Yeah, I think it has quite a useful niche in that, as you said, it's quite a bit like Fairy in that it stops you from being stopped most of the time by an ice, because there are very few ice that have damaging subs and, or not damaging in the sense of actually dealing damage, but subs that affect the runner and multiple end the runs. I think maybe only Bulwark. Usually it's one or the other, so this card stops you from being stopped by an ice at a critical point in time, and it can stop you from suffering a deleterious effect from that ice as well. So I think that for being a resource, might be 2 to install but doesn't take up any memory, it has quite a bit of flexibility. You can play it in multiple decks, maybe if you have some resource synergy or some trash synergy, as we're seeing recently. We're seeing decks with this and also Kongamato, which breaks the first subroutine in order to enable deep data mining, so that's definitely a thing that you can do. Or you can play it as more of a safety net, sort of like Grappling Hook in a more flexible but less powerful way, in that this will stop one sub, but it's usually the most important sub if it's end the run. So having a card like this that is a resource, doesn't cost any memory, you can play it in a fair number of decks, I think has the potential to be quite strong if you're trying to set up a rig that doesn't necessarily rely on getting 3 breakers, 1 of each type. This is, and even in that kind of deck, this can be a good stopgap if you can get around the fact that it's 2 cost and only 1 use.
Makes sense. White Hat is the last runner card and the first sunny card in the pack and the cycle, I think.
Yeah, so we have the White Hat first and then the Black Hat later.
How nice. So White Hat says, 0 to install, 5 influence. 0 to play, 5 influence event. Play only if you made a successful run on a central server this turn. Force the corp to trace 3. If unsuccessful, reveal all cards in HQ. The runner may choose up to 2 of the revealed cards and shuffle them into R&D. So it's, a double thought seize that requires you to have made a successful run and win a trace, neither of which are particularly onerous requirements for Sunny, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I've had this card played against me a few times now, both in Jinteki and at the store champs I've played. Mm-hmm. So the drawback that you have to run a central server, yeah, that's fine. The fact that it costs 0 is pretty good, but I think where this card falls flat is that when it actually does resolve, you then need to have something else to capitalize on that. Like, against most of the corp strategies at the moment, the corp has a fair bit of flexibility as to where the agendas are. Definitely not as much as in the past, but there are definitely tools for the corp to manage their agenda flow. So it's not a lot of the time where you will get a corp that is so flooded that, for example, they have three agendas, two non-agenda cards, and you can take the two non-agenda cards, and in that situation they can, if they really want, pay lots of money to force you to not be able to make the trace unsuccessful.
Well, I mean, the idea being that with a sunny deck, they hopefully can't, right? I mean, but trace three is a pretty high starting strength, even for a sunny trace.
Yeah, so it's not that they can't do it, but that they can't do it and also get into HQ on the same turn, right? Because if you do this, take two non-agendas, and then sort of just can't get into HQ, then it doesn't really have a lot of effect. So you really need this as well as a multi-access card as well, I think.
Yeah, even if you don't often have three agendas and two non-agenda cards, even if it's just two agendas and three non-agenda cards, or one agenda and four non-agenda cards, getting the information as well as being able to improve your odds is a pretty decent effect, I would have thought.
Yeah, that's true. I think the information is one of the stronger elements of the card, but it's also sort of like, there aren't actually that many situations where playing this and then not having HQ multi-access, so you really need to play this in combination with HQ multi-access, actually increases your chances by a lot. Like, if you're just single accessing a hand of one agenda and two non-agenda cards is not really enough to make you want to single access it, as opposed to one agenda and four non-agenda cards, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So hopefully there'll be either Sunny can play legwork with this, or hopefully there'll be some other way that Sunny can access more cards from HQ to make this work a bit better.
Something like the turning wheel, which I've seen people have been putting in Sunny already, and it works well with this, because if you can run, say, R&D successfully, you've already fulfilled the condition to play this. So, and then it's sort of like, if you have a lot of counters on your turning wheel and you have White Hat, the information that White Hat gives you is really valuable, because then you know whether to use your turning wheel counters or not. So I think that's the best combination for White Hat. And yeah, as you said, with Sunny, there's a fairly high chance that you can get it to work. I just think it needs you to build your deck a bit differently to how Sunny has been in the past.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe it opens up some more aggressive options for Sunny.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of the thing that I'm thinking.
Very cool. Well, that brings us to the end of the runner cards in the pack, and I think probably on time we should let our listeners go at this point. Perhaps we'll return to the corp side of Council of the Crest, and maybe even the next pack in the next episode. What do you reckon?
Yes. Keep your ears peeled.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Facebook. Our page is The Winning Agenda. You can head along to Twitter and tweet us at Winning Agenda. And if you want to throw a few dollars our way to keep this rickety little project running along, you can head along to www.patreon.com/thewinningagenda. Thank you for your support, and we look forward to speaking with you very soon. And lastly, congratulations again to Wilfie for another Store Champs win.
Yes, thank you, Jesse. And thank you to our listeners for listening and supporting us constantly.
And for that 5 seconds of applause at the beginning.